Relationships. There are many different kinds of relationships, aren't there? I mean, you have your relationship with your spouse. You have your relationship with your children. You have a relationship with your dad. You have a relationship with your mom. Happy Mother's Day. You have a relationship with your friends. You have relationships with your coworkers. You have a relationship with your boss. And each of those relationships are unique, aren't they? Because you have different people. You have different connections to those different people. And so with the variety and the volume of relationships that each of us have, relationships are clearly a large part of our lives. And relationships are also a large worry in a lot of our lives. A lot of us worry about relationships. A lot of us, relationships are a common stressor for us. But what makes us worry so much about them? Why do we worry about relationships? Why don't you guys take just a few minutes and find some neighbors and talk it out a little bit. Talk it out. Why do we worry about relationships? Take a few minutes. We'll take about 2 minutes to do this. Accountability. So let's, now we've had a chance to talk a little bit, let's share some of these things. What are some worries we have about relationships? Yeah. Letting people down. That's a worry for a lot of us. What are some other things? Rejection. We're worried about rejection. Putting up with each other. Am I going to be able to deal with this person's annoyances? Yes. What they look like. You worry about what they look like in a relationship. All right. What else do we have? We want our relationships to be good. So we've got kind of high standards there. Mm-hmm. Loyalty. Worry about loyalty. Wonder if we'll get stabbed in the back. Right? We worry if we'll get hurt. Or if we'll hurt the other person, we worry if we'll get disappointed or let down. We worry if we're going to do that to other people. We worry if we're going to be in a relationship that's too draining or not. Well, let me bring a cold portion of reality to the table this morning. We don't need to worry about these things. Any of the things we mentioned, we don't need to worry about them. You know why? They will happen. Right? Isn't that why we worry about it? Because we're stressed. Oh, I don't want this to happen. I don't want to get hurt. I don't want to hurt them. It's going to happen. So we really don't have any reason to worry about it. I will get hurt in relationships. I will hurt you. I will hurt others. I will be let down and I will let others down. I will fall through on my part. I'll be stabbed in the back from time to time. So what do you do then? What do you do if this is the cold, hard truth? Do you just run away and shut yourself off from other people? No, then you're in last week's sermon called loneliness. Right? So we can't do that. We are social creatures. We love to be around other people for the most part. We crave community. We were made to be around people. To be a part of a community. Relationships are important to us, and relationships are a very healthy part of being a human. So the answer is not to be a rock or an island. The answer is not to run off into solitude, into our own little desert or own cave. The answer is that we should find a way to have good relationships. And find a way to make those good relationships better. And I believe that's something that we can learn being in God's hands about relationships. I mean, who else better to turn to than God? Think about all the relationships God has had over the thousands of years that we've got recorded here. I mean, if you were to count them up, God's got at least a gugazillion relationships. right? So who else better to turn to? And think about how hard God works on each of those relationships. Think about just you, your relationship with God, just your relationship with God. And think about how much God puts into that relationship. It's not something that he can accomplish in one day. He created all of the planets and the stars and the moons in one day. And yet he works day after day after day on each of our relationships, constantly molding and reevaluating and hopefully growing and maturing in our relationship with God. And I look at how God has dealt with this gugazillion relationships, and I see a couple of truths about relationships with humans. One, in a relationship with a human, what we've already covered, you will get hurt. God gets hurt. We will get hurt. Let's write this down. I will get hurt. And I will hurt others. I will be let down and I will let others down as I pursue earthly relationships. It happens to God, and it will definitely happen to us. So what does God do when he gets hurt in these relationships? What does God do when people let him down, when they betray him? Does he turn their back on him? Does he say, okay, that's it, that's the last straw. That's 490. All right, you need to go read your Bibles about that one. No, he doesn't. God continues that relationship. He continues to reach out. And as we watch God working in these relationships, we realize that God can only be responsible for his side of the relationship. See, God has given us free will. And with that gift, he chooses to let us choose how we will respond to his offer of a relationship. And so because of that free will, God's only responsible for his side of the relationship. We're responsible for our side of the relationship. And the truth the same thing is true for us. That I can only be responsible for my part of the relationship, of any relationship that we're in. I can only be responsible for my part. So what can I do? What can I do in my part of the relationship to make a better chance to have good relationships, to have better relationships? Well, turn with me to 1 Corinthians chapter 13. If you didn't bring your Bibles, we have Bibles in the little wooden pocket there in front of you. They're the blue books. If you open your books or your Bibles to the New Testament, you'll find Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. Then you'll pass Acts and Romans, and then 1 Corinthians is right after that. 1 Corinthians chapter 13. Now, this passage that we're going to be looking at, it's often viewed as a passage that only gives advice for romantic situations, for romantic relationships. This is a popular passage to use at weddings. This is a passage that a lot of you guys will be familiar with because you've seen it on cards that you give your sweetie. But the original context of this passage, when we look at the stuff around this passage, we realize that this passage is dealing with more general relationships than just a specific relationship. Sure, it's absolutely applicable to a husband-wife relationship. Absolutely applicable to your fiancé or to your girlfriend or your boyfriend or any of those romantic relationships. But it is meant to be used on a more general level because of where it shows up. This passage is in your bulletin. I want you to leave it alone in your bulletin. There are blanks in there. Do not fill out the blanks in your bulletin right now. We're going to fill those out in a little exercise, okay? Raise your hand if you need a new bulletin. All right, so let's read this passage here. 1 Corinthians chapter 13, verse 4. Love is patient. Love is kind. It does not envy. It does not boast. It is not proud, it is not rude, it is not self-seeking, it is not easily angered. It keeps no record of wrongs. Love does not delight in evil, but rejoices with the truth. It always protects, always trusts, always hopes, always perseveres. the love passage. This passage right here is a great guide to how we should handle our side of the relationships that we have. Because what this passage does is it takes love and it just breaks it down. It spreads it out for us. And so all of our relationships should be handled with love. Now, if we take this passage that we just read and we kind of zoom out from it a little bit and you look around it at some of the other verses around this passage, you'll realize that Paul was not talking about marriage when he wrote this. He wasn't talking about the dating scene. Paul was talking about spiritual gifts. He was talking about the spiritual gifts that God has given to us through the Holy Spirit. Different gifts were given to different people. And the idea of those gifts given to different people were so that all these different people could come together and work together. In chapter 12, Paul uses the illustration of a human body about how all of these parts should be working together, because in our bodies, we've got a lot of different parts, don't we? And all of our parts, well, when all of our parts work together, our body's working the best. But when they're not, our body's not working up to its full potential. Think of all the different parts that you've got hands, you've got feet, you've got eyeballs, you've got liver, you've got kidneys, many, many, many other parts. And you can't just have a body of just one part, can you? I mean, you can't have a body of all eyes. That'd just be creepy, wouldn't it? Just little eyes moving all over everywhere on your arms and on your legs. That'd be, ooh, yuck. We need the different parts. I thought about it one day. I was trying to think of what part of the body I am. I came to the conclusion I think I'm the belly button. Kind of cute and useless, you know? But it gets deeper with age, doesn't it? Only to collect lint, though. So, as Paul is talking about these various parts of the body, and he's comparing these, he's using these different parts of the body to illustrate how we, as different people with different gifts, are to come together. We need to all work together. That's the idea that Paul's talking about around this passage that we just read. We need to function as one if we are going to benefit the church, if we're going to benefit the kingdom, if we're going to benefit all of those around us. So now what does this have to do with relationships? Well, in order for us to work together, we must have healthy relationships with each other. And that is the very subject that prompts this love passage in 1 Corinthians 13. It's not marriage. It's not romantic love, but it's community relationships. And so as we apply this passage to how we handle our side of relationships, let's personalize this passage. Here's where you're going to write in your bulletins. All right, on the long lines in this passage, I want you to put your name. On the short lines, I want you to use he or she, whichever fits you, of course. So here's an example of what it looked like. This would be mine. Dusty is patient. Dusty is kind. He does not envy. He does not boast. All right, so go on and take a minute there and write those in there. Because that's our goal. We want to embody this verse. We want this verse to correctly describe how we act in our various relationships. Three long blanks, I believe, and a handful of little short ones. Now, sometimes when we read verses or passages in the Bible, we just race right through them, don't we? It's like a race to see who's going to get to the end first. So what I'd like to do right now is I'd like to slow down a little this morning. I'd like to look at this verse in slow motion. All right? Let's slow this verse down a little bit and take a look at these different qualities that help us to have a good relationship. Patience, first quality listed there. And this can also be translated as long-suffering, because the Greek word for patience is made up of two words, literally translated long temper. Okay? It's more than just waiting on someone without yelling at them when they're taking too long to get ready in the morning. All right? Patience is more than that. It's being gentle when you'd rather be restless. It's being peaceful when it would make more sense to be frustrated. It's being calm when it would be fully acceptable to be panicked. Patience is using the same tone of voice that you used the first four times when you say for a fifth time, dinner is ready. Right, moms? Kindness. Simply being kind. Kindness is a relationship builder. Jealousy, on the other hand, is a relationship killer. Envy or jealousy is a feeling of resentment towards someone because they have something that you don't have and you want it. Sometimes jealousy can be that they're spending time with someone and you want that time to be spent with you. Now, if a spouse is spending too much time with someone of the opposite sex at work, that would be a good time to be jealous. All right, there are good reasons to be jealous. But in general, jealousy and envy, they're not healthy for a relationship. To put two together here, the bragging of a proud person. You know, a lot of us have had those friends that always have to one-up you, right? You know the kind. You're telling a story and you're sharing it at work and about how you got in a car wreck and you got hit from behind and, oh, I got whiplash in my neck, and they just jump right in, they interrupt you. Ooh, right? That's their favorite entrance, isn't it? Ooh, I got in a car wreck once. I got whiplash so bad, knocked my head right off. Paramedics had to sew it on at the scene. You know, we've got those, we know those people. They always have to do one more thing. They always have to be bigger. They're so full with pride and they're always bragging about things. And, you know, as I look at pride, I found that a lot of pride, bad pride, comes from insecurity. And insecurity seems to be the same root that goes behind someone that brags or boasts about their own life. And these are barriers to having a good relationship. Rude. Who wants to be around someone who is rude? Not many of us. Insensitive, rough, harsh, discourteous, impolite. Here's the kicker for me. Disrespectful. Respect is a very important part of a relationship. In a relationship, you give respect. In a relationship, you expect to get respect. Acting in rude manners and speaking with rude words communicates that you do not respect the other person. Self-seeking or selfishness. You can't have a relationship with yourself and others too, can you? A selfish person is more concerned with having a relationship with themselves than with others. Enough said. Not easily angered. This goes hand in hand with the whole idea of being patient. Being patient literally translated into long temper. And that doesn't mean that when you get mad, it lasts a long time. All right? It means it takes you a long time to get there, if you even get there. Not keeping a record of wrongs. Now, this is a tough one, isn't it? We do this in many relationships. We do this at work. We do this in our marriage. We do this with friendships. We do this in family. You will see this weapon pulled out of its sheath from time to time. And what are we thinking when we do that? Aren't we thinking, ooh, I think it would be a great idea for this relationship if I bring back all of the times that person has failed me. Is that what we're thinking? I mean, that it's not healthy. So don't do it. Not delighting in evil. This one catches me off guard. What? I mean, I thought for sure that someone who just is saturated in evil would be a great person to have a relationship with. Is that just me? But as I read this list that Paul's going through, this one really seems out of place, doesn't it? I mean, he's getting some real nice practical stuff. Not easily angered. Rude. You have to be kind. Not taken over by evil. It's just like, it seems really out of place. But when we look at what Paul pairs this up with, I think it helps to draw our attention to it. He presents this against rejoicing with the truth. Honesty is a very important part of any relationship. And sometimes we tell little white lies in our relationships, don't we? Sometimes we lie to hide things because we think that we're protecting the person we're in a relationship with. Often we are just slightly dishonest. And I think that's why Paul pairs this up against delighting in evil, to show us the roots of this dishonesty. Dishonesty is what Satan is known for. Jesus himself calls Satan the father of lies. We might say that we don't delight in evil. We might read over that piece of this verse and say, oh, that one doesn't apply to me. I go to church. But pause for a minute. How often are we dishonest in our relationships and we don't even think twice about it? How often do we choose to delight in dishonesty instead of taking the tough road of truth-telling? Move on to always protect. The Greek word here is a lot more interesting than the English word. This word in the Greek means to endure, to put up with. That means all of the annoyances, all of the shortcomings, that the love that propels the actions of this passage, it allows us to put up with the other person's shortcomings and annoyances. To always trust. This is the other side of being honest. Honesty is how you build trust in someone else. Trust is what you give to someone else. And trust can be very difficult to give, especially if you have been in a relationship with an unsafe person in the past. But trust is essential for relationships to grow. To always hope. Hope is a very powerful word. If you've ever noticed how powerful hope is. Hope chooses to look forward to what is to come while realizing the reality of what exists today. People like to be around hopeful people, don't they? There's a reason. The last one in this list is to always preserve. Perseverance shows commitment. It doesn't say I'll be committed. It shows I am committed. When you stand with the other person, no matter what. And these are qualities that you can put into practice if you want your side of the relationship to be the best that it can be. You can only be responsible for your side. So, be responsible for your side of the relationship. So if we're only responsible for our side of the relationship, if we can only control what we do, then how can I protect myself from unsafe relationships? We've just been given a list of things that would look like they would put us out there to get hurt by unsafe relationships, by unsafe people. You know, you cannot control how another person is going to conduct themselves, but you can limit how much opportunity they have to affect you with their actions and their attitude. You can control your level of vulnerability. I think this is where a lot of people make mistakes in relationships. They see someone that they want a relationship with, either be it romantic or a friendship relationship or someone at work. They want a working relationship. And what do? They open themselves up and they allow themselves to be vulnerable, hoping that this is going to get a favorable response from the other person. If I lay myself out wide open, then that's going to allow them to have a relationship with me. And when you do that, you're playing Russian roulette. 50-50 chance. You don't even have a six chamber. Two chambers. You're either going to end up with a safe person that's going to take good care of you, or you're going to end up with an unsafe person who's going to take full advantage of your vulnerability. So what do we do? Well, to protect against this, I should gauge my vulnerability by the presence of these qualities in the other person. These qualities that we've just listed, these qualities that we've just gone through, we use in our life to be the best on our side of the relationship. But you can also take these qualities and you can hold them up against this other person and say, is this person a safe person or an unsafe person? Let's take a look at this. We've got a vulnerability gauge. And if you can't read those small words, it goes from acquaintance to friend to BFF. And teenagers, am I right? That's best friends forever, right? All right, that's the closest you can get with a friend, okay? So we take this and we got this checklist here, and what you want to do is you want to take this list of things that we've just read about, and you want to look at the other person in this light, and you say, are they patient? If they are, then the gauge goes up. If they're not, then the gauge stays down. Let's say that this person that we're talking about isn't a patient person, okay? So they get a big X. All right, are they kind? If it's yes, the gauge goes up. If it's no, the gauge goes down. Okay, let's say this person we're talking about, they're a kind person. Are they envious, boastful, proud, or self-seeking? If they are, then the gauge stays where it was. However, if they are not these things, then we're safe to move the gauge up to the next level. And here we have, we've entered into the freedom to be able to be open with this person a little more than you would an acquaintance. So are they rude? If they are not rude, then you would open up the gauge a little more. But let's say that this person is rude. So the gauge doesn't move. Okay, they're impatient and they're rude. They've got a lot of other good things going on their side though. Are they easily angered? Well, we've got a person here that's not very patient and is rude, so I would say this person probably is easily angered. So as we're building this make-believe person, they're easily angered, so the gauge doesn't move. They keep no records of wrong, though. That's good, so it goes up. They are honest, which is tough because this person is not very sensitive. They're kind of rude. So their honesty might come across a little brash. But they're honest, and honesty is a good part, so we'll give them some points for that. It's a good quality. They always protect. This person puts up with your annoyances. And even though this person isn't the most patient person, they still stick it out with you. Even though they might be rude, they try and make amends for their comments or their actions. So they protect, and so the gauge goes up. And though this person is honest, they have a hard time trusting you. And so we won't move the gauge any because they have a hard time giving you their trust. Now, as odd as it may be, this impatient, easily angered, rude person actually has a bright side to their attitude of life. This person's very hopeful, and they shared hope with you. And they've done so in times when you've really needed it, and it's helped to give you that push through. So we're going to move that gauge up a little more because they're hopeful. And you cross over in the area where you can be close friends with them. Best friends forever in text language. And so we move it up one more because this person has stuck it out with you. They have persevered. And so you see how you can gauge your vulnerability based on the level of intensity and the amount of these qualities that this other person has. So you can gauge someone that way. If they lack good qualities and they have a lot of bad qualities, then your gauge should be low. And you should be able to say, this is an unsafe person to allow myself to be vulnerable to. However, if they have an abundance of good qualities and they lack bad qualities, then your gauge should be high. And you should be able to say, hey, this is a safe person. I can be vulnerable with this person. In the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus says a few things that might seem contradictory. In Matthew chapter 5, verses 40 through 42, Jesus tells them, he says, hey, if someone asks for your coat, give them your shirt too. He says, if they ask to walk with you 1 mile, if they ask for you to walk with them rather 1 mile, then walk with them 2 miles. Go the extra mile, take care of them, do the extra things. If they ask of something, give it to them. That's very loving. That's very servant-hearted. That's what we read, and that's consistent throughout the Bible. As Christians, we should love. We should be servant-hearted. So that doesn't contradict our vulnerability, though. We're still doing our part of the relationship. We're still being kind. We're still being patient. We're still not easily angered or rude. We're still covering our side. Now, verses later in chapter 7, the same sermon. Jesus tells them, hey, don't take what's sacred and throw it to dogs. Don't take your pearls and throw them to pigs. Jesus is saying, you need to love, but you need to love with wisdom. All right, if you take something of value, pearls are valuable. Something that is sacred, that's valuable. And what Jesus is saying, you don't want to take that valuable thing and place it before something, someone, that you know is going to devour it. He doesn't say don't serve, don't love. These two things don't contradict each other. He's still saying, hey, go the extra mile, but watch it. Be careful. Don't take what is valuable and lay it before someone that is going to tear you up. Don't take your heart and place it before a pig or before a dog. Just be wise. Gauge the people that you interact with by this verse in 1 Corinthians. And if they're an unsafe person, you do your part. You love them with the love that Christ has put in your heart. But you also protect yourself and be careful and be wary. And know, this person's not safe to be vulnerable with. But then on the other hand, when you gauge them and it's positive and you see, hey, this is a safe person, I encourage you, get out of your shell. Lay yourself out and be vulnerable. You'll never know what kind of relationships you can have with people. Go into them wisely. If you've got a safe person with safe qualities and they show all the signs that they're going to love you back, then allow yourself to be vulnerable and watch that relationship grow. And watch this body work more in unity. Watch it work the way that Paul and the way that Jesus Christ desired it to. And then we can stop worrying about our relationships.